is and who Srila Prabhupada is and the significance of initiation. Okay. So the word initiation means many things. Of course, in Sanskrit, the word is diksha. So to analyze the word diksha precisely, it means basically to achieve divya gyan. Divya gyan means transcendental knowledge. And shayate, by becoming disciplined by the spiritual master. Because in order to achieve anything within this world, we require some discipline. That may be a bad word for all of you, discipline, right? Like when you were children, your parents would do what to you? They would discipline you. And if you heard that word, you would run, right? If you did something wrong, it's time to discipline you. And usually the discipline would be in the form of something we call shastra. In Sanskrit, that means the stick. Or in Hindi, you say, what, lati? Lati. So, we are not talking about that type of discipline. Because, at least in the modern day and age, the spiritual masters don't use the stick. They use something called shastra, instead of shastra. There's two words. They pronounce differently. Shastra means the books, basically, and the instructions by the previous acharyas. But one thing, everyone, please leave your mobile phones on, because anyone whose mobile phone gets rung during the class will be giving $1,000 to the deities. They'll be vowing to give that much. So please leave it on. I'm waiting for these sounds. So, in any case, so that's the only way to get people to turn it off. Shastra means the words coming down in disciplined succession and from the spiritual master and the Vedic literatures. There's many Vedic literatures. First of all, you have the four Vedas. That's right, someone just turned it off. That was the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Tarva Veda, Yajur Veda, right? You've got the four Vedas. And the Rig Veda is the Veda of hymns. The Sama Veda is the Veda of the rhythms, the proper rhythms, the way to chant those hymns. Yajur Veda is the Veda of offering Yaja, Yajna. And finally, Atharva Veda is the Veda that's not used that much. It's the Veda of weapons that the Kshatriyas would make. You know, the Astra, like Brahmastra. You've heard of that before? Brahmastra? Brahmastra, Vayuastra. I'm sure you watched the films and heard all those things. So that's the Atharva Veda. And after the Vedas, there's something called the Fifth Vedas. Now, some of you may come from a background where you've heard of, there's different samajas, like Arya Samaj, but they only accept the four Vedas. You heard about that before? Some of you have heard about that before. Well, I got news for you. Some good news. Good news for us. That in the four Vedas, in the Rig Veda, in the first chapter, 12th chapter, I think it's 22nd verse, it says, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya. Does anyone know the translation of that verse? No? It means the demigods, they're all worshipping who? Vishnu. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya. The demigods are looking to Vishnu. And then in the Chandogya Upanishad, which is actually part of the original Vedas, of the Atharva Veda, there's the statement, Itihasa Purananam Panchama Veda Uchite. I mentioned this the other day. What does that mean? Anyone know what that means? Any Sanskrit experts here? No. It means itihasa. Basically, itihasa means thus it happened in Sanskrit. Itihasa. It means history. history. It's a way of saying history in Sanskrit. Itihasa. Thus it happened. Itihasa. That means the histories. Like the histories we have in Sanskrit are the Ramayana, Mahabharata. Generally those are the two most famous histories. And then Purananam, and of the Puranas. Purana means old. Like if you say to someone, you're very Purana. That's an insult, right? So, but basically in this particular context, the word Purana means the Bhagavatam, the 18 main Puranas. There's 6 for those in the mode of goodness, 6 for those in the mode of passion, and 6 for those in the mode of ignorance. So Itihasa, Puranam, Panchama Veda Uchite. That the Puranas and the Itihasas, they're the 5th Veda. And that's what the 4 Vedas say. So if you accept, if you're a member of the Arya Samaj, and you accept the 4 Vedas, then you have to accept what? The Mahabharata, Ramayana, and Bhagavatam. Because that's what the 4 Vedas say. How can you say you follow the 4 Vedas without following the 4 Vedas? Does it make sense? So use that argument next time you speak to someone. But make sure you know Sanskrit. Because if you don't know Sanskrit, it's not going to work. So, fortunately, we don't know. So, anyway, so, getting back to the point. So, a shastra means basically that. The 4 Vedas and the Puranas and Itihasas. This is shastra. So, when one takes initiation, one promises to be disciplined by shastra. And what does that mean? That means yashastra, the vidhi, or the injunctions in the shastra, that means the rules and regulations, for those who don't understand injunctions, then they're followed exactly. And they're not adjusted. Nowadays, people want to adjust religious principles according to time, place, and circumstance. They say, I mean, for example, I have know some monks in the Christian church, and one of the rules they have is to be vegetarian. It may come as a surprise. And I ask them, why aren't you vegetarian even though your founder Acharya told you to be vegetarian? They said, well, things are different now. I said, why are things different? They said, it's Kali Yuga. Why does that make things different? Or some of our members who speak to members of another church called the Seventh-day Adventist Church is supposed to be vegans. And they ask them, why aren't you following the rules of your church? Well, you have to be practical. You can't follow the rules. But anyway, religious principles, dharmam dasakshat bhagavat pranitam, they come from above. They don't come from below. It's not that what the media is telling us, like the television, the radio, the internet, that that makes the absolute truth, or makes religion. Religion, or, let's not even talk about religion, let's talk spirituality has to be descending, rather than ascending. Because we are imperfect, we have imperfect senses, we make mistakes, right? We have a tendency to be cheated, we have a tendency to be bewildered. So therefore we have to accept from above the knowledge. Just like if you go to the university, you don't teach the professor teaches you. Imagine you went to a university class and sat down and the professor of mathematics comes in front of you and says, okay class, and you just tell him, shut up, I'm going to teach this class. Very nice. But it wouldn't work. You have to take the knowledge from the professor, not from student. So the problem in this world with most expressions of spirituality is they're taking knowledge from the students rather than from professors. And people are too proud to admit that they're students rather than professors, right? Everybody has their own truth. I remember when many years ago, before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, there was the philosophy, it's still there today, that if something feels good, it's good for you. That was hippie philosophy. You've heard that before? If it feels good, it's good for you. That's not true. A lot of things feel good, but they're really not good for you. So, therefore, we accept descending process. And in our descending process, we have an unbroken chain of spiritual masters that come all the way from Krishna. Krishna is always the first spiritual master in any bona fide line of disciplic succession. So our line of disciplic succession is called the Brahma disciplic succession. Technically Brahma. Madhva Gaudiya disciplic succession. That means Lord Brahma heard from Krishna and then passed it down, Narada Muni, Vyas, all the way down to the present day and age. And the most prominent personality in our Sampradaya in the modern age is His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who you see on the Vyasa sign back there. He is the founder acharya of the modern age. You understand? The founder acharya. It's called sometimes the fifth founder acharya. Because we have other founder acharyas, like we have Madhvacharya and Varkacharya, Vishnu Swami, like that, and Ramanujacharya, who several hundred years ago, some of them 1,000 years ago, were prominent in India. And they were the main acharyas of their 4 sampradayas. That's the Lakshmi Sampradaya, the Kumara Sampradaya, the Lord Shiva Sampradaya, and the Brahma Sampradaya. But the most prominent one of the main of the modern day and age is Srila Prabhupada. And why do we say that Srila Prabhupada is the most prominent one? Because he did something that nobody else ever did before. What did he do? He not only came to the Western world, but he changed Malechas into Brahmas. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Traditionally in India, if someone was of a lower caste, they wouldn't even be allowed to step on a Brahmin's shadow. If they stepped on a Brahmin's shadow, they could be killed. Or beaten up, at least. Can you imagine such a culture? Very strict. But Prabhupada, and normally it takes many, many births to be a Brahmin. There's one story in the Mahabharata where there was once upon a time there was a worm. And the worm was crossing the road. And Srila Vyasadeva said, "Why are you going quickly across the road?" And the worm said, "There's some cart coming. It's going to run me over." And Srila Vyasadeva said, "No, you should get run over." Why? Because the next life, you'll take birth at a higher species. And after that, higher, higher, higher. Eventually you'll become a Chandala. Then after that, Shudra. After that, Vaishya. A gold merchant. What's the name of a gold merchant? A Sony. And after that, you'll take birth as a Kshatriya. And after that, you'll take birth as a Brahmin, and then you'll be my disciple when you're a Kshatriya, you know, a Vaishya, Kshatriya, Brahmin, you'll be my disciple, and after that, you go back to God. After many, many births, Krishna also says that in Gita, doesn't he? Bahunam janmanamante yanvamam prapadjate vasudeva sadaviti sa mahatma sukurvava. After many, many births and deaths, one actually comes to understand that Krishna is God. Krishna is everything. So the worm said Hari Bol and remained in the middle of the road and after many births became a Brahmin. But the most wonderful thing is that Srila Prabhupada, taking up Lord Chaitanya's command to preach everywhere in Krishna consciousness and get everyone to chant the holy name, has actually done miracles. You know, sometimes people in India may do miracles, and other people worship him as God, right? Just because you can do a little miracle, pull a rabbit out of a hat, or what else, ashes out of your hands or something like that, miracle. But Prabhupada has done a better miracle. What's the use of a rabbit? You don't even have rabbits here in Fiji, do you? So what would you do with a rabbit? So, but Prabhupada has actually changed people who were from any walk of life. And he's made them great saints. And that's amazing. That's the proof that Krishna consciousness is real. And Prabhupada has established something called the United Nations of the Spiritual World. Just like, of course, most of you here are from Indian extraction. Me also. So, last life. last life. This life I had to take birth in the West to serve Prabhupada, but last life. So, but actually our temples are just like wonderful, different people, different. If you go to New Zealand, some of you have been to New Zealand, our temple has people from China, India, of course, a few Kiwis here and there, Australia, America, Malaysia, oh, Fiji, I forgot about Fiji. Fiji, Africa, and they're all working together, the United Nations of the Spiritual World. So that's Srila Prabhupada's miracle. And he was originally in the spiritual world. Krishna directly sent him here to make this miracle. Krishna said to Prabhupada, you come here. And Prabhupada didn't come here for the same reason we came here. We came here because he wanted to be God. And he came here because he wanted to serve God. It's quite a bit of difference. We want to be the center, we want to be the controller, etc. So that's Prabhupada's position, and that's the simple succession. And the advantage, if we follow this discipline of Krishna consciousness, Diksha, then we can become happy. Because our original nature is to be always happy. Sat, Chit, and Ananda. That's our nature. And the reason you're happy sometimes and sad another times is because you don't understand that's your nature. So by chanting, following the process of Krishna consciousness, serving Srila Prabhupada and Lord Sri Krishna, Sri Sri Gaura Nittai, and the various incarnations of the Lord, then you become happy. Isn't that what everyone wants? Happiness? That's why we do anything we do? That's why you go to the karaoke clubs at night? Anybody here? I bet not, that's a question. Some of you might. So that's why you go there at night, to be happy. That's why you go surfing. Anyone here ever go surfing? Some of you Western people might have been surfing. I used to body surf. Now I'm surfing in the waves of devotional service. That's much better. Because then you don't have to wait for a wave. If you're surfing, you know what surfing is? You have heard surfers come here to teach you. Surfing, you have to wait for the perfect wave. But if you're spiritual life, you're always riding the wave of devotional service. So that's what you get. And you realize your spiritual identity, and you realize your eternal identity, and life is perfect. And all you have to do is follow a simple process of chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And following a few little rules and regulations, no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. That was quick. I said it quickly so you wouldn't understand. Anyways. So people sometimes ask us, why didn't we pick these four regulative principles? Why didn't we pick some easy ones? Like, no beetroots. No, what else would be easy? No carrots. No, we picked difficult, we didn't pick difficult ones. The reason we have these four regular principles is because these activities bring one's consciousness down to the lower modes of nature, and they also entangle one in karma vandana, the bondage of karma, of reaction and reaction and reaction. Like, as you sow, you shall reap. If you do something, you get the result. If you kill an animal, guess what? Then you get killed next life by the animal. Like, there's that story of Magrari the hunter. He was a hunter, and Narada Muni, a great sage, showed him what was going to happen in his next life. So there's the reason we follow those four regular principles. And you'll be happier if we're following the four regular principles. So, anyway, just a little bit more about chanting. I mentioned we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we chant 16 rounds on the beads every day, minimum. That's a minimum. Actually, we should chant more, but we're being very liberal. Srila Prabhupada originally wanted the devotees to chant 64 rounds a day, but devotees were not able to do it. That's just life. So Prabhupada reduced it to 16. So in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, there is a methodology in doing so. There's things to be avoided and things to be done. as positive and negative injunctions. The negative injunctions are the 10 offenses against chanting, which we always mention at the time of initiation. The first offense to be avoided is blaspheming Vaishnavas or devotees who have dedicated their lives to Krishna. That means all the Vaishnavas, not just the guru, not just the acharyas, not just the temple president, but every Vaishnava we should respect. Like when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would see a Vaishnava, he would say to them, Dasosmi, I am your servant. But that should be our attitude. We're servants of everyone. Servants of the Vaishnava, servants of the devotees of God. So second offense is the offense of thinking the names of the demigods, like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, are equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Lord Brahma is a physician. All these demigod names are positions of a particular living entity. And Krishna says, Aham Adhiri Devanam. I'm the source of all the demigods, all the devas. And if you worship Krishna, it's watering the root of the tree. All the devas will be satisfied. And if you worship one deva, then the other 32,999,999 devas will be upset with you. Because there's 33 million devas. So if you really want to worship the devas, you have my blessing. But you have to worship all 33 million of them. You got that? 33 million. Do you have space on your altar for that many devas? Do you even know their names? No. Because if you miss one, you'll be offended. And that's it. Finished. So when we worship Krishna, Krishna takes care of everything. And Krishna's name is not, it's Krishna. It's directly Krishna. So it's not equivalent to any name of any deva who is a servant of Krishna. And so the third offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. Obviously the spiritual master speaks on behalf of Krishna, but we don't follow blindly, but we accept the spiritual master's talk as coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next offense is to blaspheme literatures which glorify the Lord, or literatures in pursuance or in concordance with the Vedic literatures. That means literatures in any religion. We don't criticize any religion. When we see people worshiping in another religion, we think they are worshiping the same God, just a little bit different cultural way of doing it. We don't criticize. We find many so-called religious people, they criticize other religions. They say, you're going to hell if you don't do what we're doing, right? Their philosophy is so much negativity. We don't have this negativity. You worship God, you chant God's name in any religion, wonderful, fantastic, you go to God. God, Nam Namakari, Bahugad, these are Sarvashaktis. God has unlimited names. So, and the next offense to be avoided is to think the glories of chanting are imagination. Next offense is to give some concocted, perverted interpretation about chanting. Next offense is to use the chanting to commit sinful activities. In other words, we understand by chanting we become free from all bad karma. So it's not that we should do more bad karma and chant, because that doesn't work. Next offense is to think that chanting is like some other ritual that we do, like in the Karma Kanja section of the Vedas. We do so many rituals. That's true. But the chanting is on a different level. Like we're going to have this havan or fire sacrifice. That's a nice ritual. But it's not equivalent to the chanting. The chanting is everything. That's all you have to do. If you want to be God conscious, all you have to do is be absorbed in the chanting. And that's what Prabhupada did when he came to America. All he did was sit down, didn't have any paraphernalia, didn't have a drum. He just sat down in this place called Pumpkin Square Park in New York. And actually even today they dedicated a tree to him there where he sat. Underneath the tree they put a little plaque there. And he chanted and so many people came. So that's all that's required. So, and then we shouldn't instruct people about the intimate aspects of Krishna consciousness and the philosophy unless they're ready to hear. Even in the Western literature you have Jesus Christ saying, I have much to tell you that you cannot bear to hear. So if you instruct people in some such a way that they will misuse the information or blaspheme, then that is not And then, finally, it's to not have complete faith in the chanting and to maintain material attachments, we should be striving gradually to become more attached to Krishna. And then at the same time, material attachments will fade away automatically. Also, it's offensive to be inattentive while you're chanting. Because when you're chanting, you're directly communicating with Krishna. And when you're directly communicating with Krishna, if you ignore him, he'll be upset with you. Any of you, if I talk to you, and I don't listen to you while you're talking, you'll be upset. I remember when I first became a Hare Krishna devotee, whenever my mother would talk to me, I would just chant. You know, I thought she was Maya. I thought, Ma means Maya. You understand? So she would say, my dear son, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And I would look at her feet instead of her face, because I really thought she was mine. So, fanatic, little fanatic person. And then she got very upset. She said, look at me when I talk to you. Stop that chanting. And I said, no. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And anyway, after a while, I gave up my fanaticism, and I talk to my mother now. Have a nice relationship. But in the beginning, it was a little difficult. So if you do that with Krishna, of course, with Krishna, you should look at his feet when you talk to him. It's a little bit different than with your mother. With your mother, look at her face. With Krishna, look at your feet. Look at his feet. So then Krishna will be upset if you ignore him while you're chanting, because you're communicating, he's talking to you also. So we follow that, the negative objections, avoiding things to avoid, as well as the four regulative principles. And then positively we chant with our heart. Chanting should be done with one's heart, with one's subtle body, not just with the gross body. Not that you just chant like a parrot imitating someone's chanting, because that will not be effective. You should chant, crying out to Krishna, please, Ayananda Tanuja Kinkaram Patitamam Vishaleva Mamuro Kripayata Vapada Pankajasta Da Duli Sadrasambha Shintya. O son of Nanda Maharaj, O Krishna, I'm your eternal servant, but somehow or other, I'm in this miserable material world. Please pick me up. Please save me. Fix me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So this should be our mood in chanting. And if we do that, studying, of course, that verse comes from the Shikshashtaka, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then our lives will be perfect. And then one final thing, that all of you are getting initiated, there's four devotees getting initiated, you're also accepting His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vinanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada is your ultimate source of instruction or shiksha. He's the founder, Acharya, the International Society of the Krishna Consciousness. This means he sets the example, that's what achar means. Achar is not simply some pickles you buy in the store. Right? Not true, mango pickles. But achar in Sanskrit means example. He's the example and he gives the instructions for all of us, and we all work under the direction of Srila Prabhupada, no matter who our guru is. And we're all part of one team. We don't want any team spirit. And we don't want the sense that I'm a member of this guru's team and someone else is a member of another guru's team. Sectarian spirit, I mean. We don't want that. We're all part of one team. We don't want guru groupies in our Krishna consciousness. We want everybody to be part of Prabhupada's team, Krishna's team. We're all one in that sense. You understand? Don't want anybody distinguishing, you know, who is my initiating guru, who's your initiating guru, my guru is better than your guru. That's for babies. When a little boy goes up to another little boy and says, my father is better than your father. I mean, after a while, we have to grow up a little bit. Isn't it? Stupid. Why do you have to remain 5 years old when you're 60? Doesn't make sense. So, anyway, mature, time to mature in Krishna consciousness. So now we'll continue with the initiation. And I guess we should first do the purification before I get the beans and everything like that. Do you need a microphone? Or, oh, you have a microphone. So Nanda Kishore will do the purification, and then we'll give the devotees, allow the devotees to take their vows and get their spiritual names.
So you have the Ashman cross in front of you, the school. You'll be taking, you'll just